You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to Intercepted, presented by Acme Packing Company. I'm Justin Mosqueda. I'm joined here by one of our own, Archon. Say what's up to the people, Archon.
What's up to the people?
How we doing?
It's good. It's good. Just got back from a chamber event, so rushed to try and fill the pod void that was left.
I want to talk first about the trade deadline. People are very mad, kind of understandably, but if you look at the options, I'm a whole lot less mad about this. I mean, I know people wanted to make a trade. People want something to come and save us, right? I mean, that's what it is. They want something to come save the season. I just don't know if it was available. I mean, one, first of all, team's already 3-5, right? I mean, it's an uphill climb to make that. You have maybe two losses left in the rest of the season. It's week 9 we're going into that you have available before, you know, you might get kicked out of the playoffs. The NFC East is probably going to get 3 spots. So you're talking about 1 spot between, I guess the way to think about it is there's 4 spots between the Buccaneers, Falcons, Seahawks, Niners, Rams, Packers, Vikings. That's the way to think about it. I don't know if there's a wide receiver that would have made up the distance and assured you that you would even make it to the playoffs. And then even then, like, you're playing a road game against the Eagles in the second round, best case scenario. Like, I just didn't get the outrage of not making a move at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, like you said, is people wanted to be saved, but there wasn't anything that was going to be out there that was going to do that. I mean, we saw, you know, 2 receivers moved yesterday, and I don't think, you know, either of those are going to turn the Packers into a juggernaut, which is, you know, that's the level of play that they're basically going to have to do to just get the 7 seed or maybe the 6 seed at this point, you know, because the NFC East teams have run so far in front that you're fighting, and the division is basically over. Minnesota has such a large lead at this point and already has, you know, 1 win. So getting the tiebreaker there would even be 1 win over Green Bay. And so getting the tiebreaker there becomes even harder. And so you're going to give up these assets so you can fight with teams that are probably better than you, even with whatever addition you get, to get the right to get your ass kicked by Philly in round 2 if things go well. Because, I mean, we've seen this Packers team. We know what's going to happen if they run up against a good offensive line and a good running game. Like, we know how that story is going to end. And so I think from my perspective, I think the most frustrating thing, even though I knew going into the day that wasn't going to happen, is this team probably should have tried to start this rebuild early, because it is coming, and, you know, they're gonna, you know, probably have to cut Aaron Jones in February and get nothing for him, when, you know, we saw what the Rams had offered for Christian McCaffrey. And if they're delusional enough to think that they're a running back away from that team being good, you know, you can let them do that. But outside of, you know, kind of accelerating the rebuild, there was nothing that they were going to do this week that was going to, you know, change anything.
Yeah. And they already had touched basically every contract. So it wasn't like cap space was something that they could create. I mean, outside of, I think it's Dean Lowry. Lowry's mm-hmm. the only guy that, like, really you could touch. You look at next year, though, and we're kind of deviating from the trade deadline thing, but it kind of came up with the Brandon Cooks trade, right? People talked about Brandon Cooks potentially landing with Minnesota, potentially landing with Dallas, potentially landing with Green Bay. It seemed like the hangup was always his guarantees. Next year, he has an $18 million guaranteed salary. The Packers just couldn't really get that contract on their books. I mean, you look at next year, it's tricky when you look at all the Spotrac and over the cap numbers, because the 51 at the beginning of the season is totally different than like the actual season starting. The Packers, once the season actually starts, they're going to be like $30 million over the cap. And that's with all of these free agents hitting the market, right? Now you can say, yeah, you can manipulate some of these things, which that's true. That is true. But I do wonder how many of these contracts they touch, because they could, I mean, a guy like Kenny Clark, you could touch his contract, extend him. Aaron Jones is a little riskier one just because we know how running backs age. They might do it, though. They really might. I know you're saying, like, that you're shaking your head right now, Arcon, and you're like, no, we got to cut Aaron Jones. He's the entire offense.
This man is almost 30 years old.
Like, what do you think Aaron Rodgers is going to say?
You tell him to go retire. Like, this team.
That hurts you even worse. Yeah, I mean.
What are you going to do? Like, the thing you need to, I've been on this for a while, but like, the thing you need to accept is if 2022 didn't work, it was over. Because the Bakhtiari contract, I mean, it's going to be week to week, you know, whether he's available. You know, they might have to cut David Bakhtiari this spring because he's due a pretty chunky roster bonus. And, you know, Preston Smith is 31. Kenny Clark's going to go into his age 28 season. You know, Adrian Amos is going to be a free agent, and he's going to hit your cap just because of what they did with the void years. And they didn't extend it, which actually, you know, looking so far this season doesn't even look like, you know, that bad of an idea, you know, in a vacuum. And so basically this team's going to go in with three prime age players in Clark, Alexander, Rashawn Gary, and a 40-year-old quarterback. And with, you know, what is not going to be amazing amounts of draft capital, and that team's going to go compete. You know, you might trip into the seventh seed, and congratulations, you're going to get whooped by, you know, good teams. Those teams that barely make the playoffs don't compete for Super Bowls anymore. You know, when the Packers did it in 2010, you know, and then we saw that the Giants do a similar thing. That era has been over for a while. You know, if you're not one of the three best teams in your conference, you don't go to Super Bowls.
Yeah, it has been tough, especially with, I mean, really it started with the Saints, right? The Saints just pushing, not really pushing, prying that window just open as long as they possibly can. And then all the other teams realizing like, oh, we can do this. And their quarterbacks being like, we want this to happen, right? So now you're getting in the spot. I mean, I think it was, what was it, like week three, Buffalo was already the biggest Super Bowl favorite that we had seen since like the 07 Patriots, to put that in perspective. And Buffalo's just steamrolled since then. We're watching the Philadelphia Eagles game right now. They're tied up at the half, but they're probably going to beat the Texans.
God, I hope so. Just for like, you know, the world, my worldview staying like intact. Yeah.
I mean, those two teams are running away with it. And you're looking at what the Eagles are doing. I mean, they bought Robert Quinn on a rental. And we're like, yeah, screw it. They were in on the Alvin Kamara trade. Like they didn't make it, but I mean, they're having those conversations. Like they're just full on like titles open, title windows open right now, hit it hard. I was thinking about this, really yesterday, because I really started playing around with kind of what the Packers could do. And I do think that they have options if they do want to compete next year. Not necessarily just like wide receiver and stuff. Obviously, you're going to have to get guys like Devontae Wyatt. Like, he's going to have to play football games.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you could try that.
Everyone just does not talk about the first round pick who's 24 years old and just can't play NFL football right now.
Has there been a single press conference question about that all season? Because that to me is like the most obvious question to ask is like, hey, why is this 24 year old who is like a really, really old pick, particularly for the Packers, who like, you know, Goot has an age fetish and LaFleur has a size fetish.
Yeah.
And so he's this old guy that they draft, which the whole point is supposed to be, okay, he can come in this
ground
where we have to compete in 2022. Okay. Well, this guy, boom, we have solved, you know, the three tech problem. Well, nope. We're playing Jaron Reed, who's getting his ass handed to him, and Dean Lowry, who the opening play of every week is getting his face thrown in the ground. You know, you got to try something else, even if he might not be good. Like Dean Lowry's not working either.
Yeah, him and Slayton, I would like to see them get looks. But there are ways this team, like I said, I mean, you're going to have to take some long-term risks with pushing money for Clark, pushing money for Aaron Jones and stuff moving forward. You could touch the Aaron Rodgers deal. I mean, a lot of this does come back down to, like, what's the confidence that you have that, like, Aaron Rodgers is going to be keep playing? Because the Packers can't make a lot of these decisions unless they get something from Rodgers that says, like, I am going to be around for the next 3 years, because then it will not be worth it for him, right? So there's that option of, okay, let's keep this team together as long as we can, right? Let's do what we can. It's going to be pinching pennies a whole lot. Or it's just like, let's take our medicine, and then a new title window kind of opens up in 2024.
But oh, it's like, longer. It's longer than that, buddy. It ain't 24. It's like,
because if they eat some of this dead cap, I mean, they'd have to get, one, the cap is going up. Two, they'd have to get some free agents in. Like, they'd have to make a big swing in 2024 in almost the same way that they made, like, the two Smiths and Turner that 1 year in free agency.
Okay, so you're saying if Rodgers is just like, okay, we can be bad in 2023, and yeah, I'll just kind of mail it in basically for a year, and then we'll try and compete in 24. That's what you're, yes, kind of saying in that case, to take the medicine. See, I initially took it as like, okay, you know, we're just going to be bad, and then, you know, the post Rodgers era, it's like, if that happens, yeah, like, if Rodgers retires, I mean, I don't think people are quite ready for how terrible the 23 team is going to be. It's going to be like Bears-esque in terms of just like, you tear everything down to the studs. Your starting lineup has non-NFL players in it, like guys who are practice squad type players in it. And that's fine, because if you're going to be that bad, I mean, you might as well really go for it to try and get that quarterback. But they're talking at least a 2 year like deep rebuild. But
yeah, if Rodgers retires, that's when it's like, oh, remember when everyone was complaining about like Tariq Carpenter and like Jonathan Ford just like being on the roster and not play football? Like, those guys are going to be playing now, because you have no money. You have no money at all. I think it'd be something like, I think it was like north of $45 million in dead cap for him not to play next year. So if he retires, which, who knows, man? No one's in control of this guy. No one can get a commitment out of this dude, right? Like,
yeah, it's been a banner week for conspiracy weirdos in the sports world. And so you really don't know where things can turn.
Yeah. I want to get back to the trade deadline, because these were kind of the options, right? So the one guy who can play this year, right, was Chase Claypool. The Packers, apparently, this was reported by Tom Silverstein, said that, you know, the Packers offered a second round pick for Chase Claypool, who's going to have his contract redone probably this offseason. He's 24 year old, so he's relatively young, but I mean, he's had like 300 yards this year. And a lot of people keep pointing, like, his rookie year, he had 10 touchdown receptions. That was a terrible passing offense. And now they have more receivers, and they kind of forgotten about Chase Claypool. Claypool makes a lot of sense in the Packers system, in that, like, height, weight, speed, he kind of fits everything LaFleur wants to do. But if you already have Alan Lazard, I don't think it made a lot of sense to add Chase Claypool. I know Lazard's not going to be there next year, but, like, I don't know. Give me Lazard instead of a Claypool extension and giving up a second round pick. The Bears, luckily, in my opinion, like, they snagged him, so we don't have to deal with that. I can't. Why are Packers fans mad about this? What were you going to offer, a second and a fourth? Because that's probably what it would have taken to get it done. Or a first? You're not giving a first round pick for this guy. Get out of here.
No, so like the Claypool thing, so he has about every excuse in the book as to like why he hasn't been productive, because his like height, weight, speed thing, you're like, okay, this is like a dominant down the field threat. And then his body size, like you said, plays pretty well. You know, you can insert him into the formation. He can do a lot of the Lazard dirty work stuff too. You know, the new like ESPN receiver rating analytics that just dropped, I think today, I actually like Claypool quite a bit. And he's been playing, you know, with Roethlisberger and then Trubisky and now Pickett. So it's like you're playing with guys who can't throw the ball down the field at all. But, you know, that, like you said, though, that's a lot. Like, Green Bay can't give up a first for Chase Claypool. He was drafted in the second round, and now you've eaten up basically all of his rookie deal. You know, you've got 1 year left. So, and now, because of the way that the leverage works in these, is he's going to kind of have Chicago over a barrel here. Number one, because Chicago's going to have more cap space than they're even going to be able to really spend next year. And so he'll probably have them over a barrel in terms of, you guys gave up, you know, what is it basically going to be a first round pick for him.
It's going to be a top 40 pick.
Yeah. Probably. And so, you know, and if you do that as Green Bay, okay, now you have to go extend Chase Claypool with what money that you don't really have. And so you're the way that you're going to have to really try and backload those cap hits in terms of like roster bonuses, like what they did with the Bakhtiari deal, where it's like roster bonuses that are really signing bonuses, but we have to make them roster bonuses just to get through the first year. You know, that's going to leave you in a rough situation anyway, for a guy who is wide receiver three in Pittsburgh. Like, it's not like Pittsburgh's receiving room is just completely loaded. It's fine, but it's, you know, you're not pulling somebody off the 2011 Packers.
Yeah, and that Steelers passing offense is probably the worst in the league right now. And I know a lot of that has to do with the quarterback, but still. Another option, Brandon Cooks was a guy that, again, was talked about. That $18 million was a big deal. It seemed like that was the hangup for the Dallas Cowboys, and they were working on it to the last minute, and it's like, how had that not come up yet? The deadline to rework some of these contracts had already passed. So it's not like Houston could even have done anything. The Cooks thing is something I want to watch. And it seems like Dallas is the place he's kind of circled and highlighted. But if the Packers can get a couple wins under the belt, and if Cooks makes a big enough mess, I mean, the only time I've seen a big enough mess to kind of justify a release of that size was like Antonio Brown. But Cooks has not been showing up to practice. He's inactive for this game on Thursday Night Football. It doesn't seem like he's happy. I don't know if he's going to take it the distance, but if he wants to, I'd like to have him on the team.
Yeah, he's good. I just
can't afford him at that $18 million right now.
The problem with Cooks, though, and I saw this today, is that Houston actually cannot afford to cut him this season. They would have to rework the other deals on the books. And so if you're Houston, he's just, you know, throwing a fit and being, you know, even if he's just like not skipping practice, but he, you know, he comes into the building and he's just being a malcontent, just send him home. Because the Texans aren't going anywhere this year. And so you just deal with it in the off season. You know, rework his contract in the off season to trade him, you know, which also so let's just say we were existing in a world in which Houston reworked his deal. They were asking for a second and a fourth per report. So that's basically a first rounder's worth of draft picks. Brandon Cook's contract is a negative value contract right now because his salary is $18 million fully guaranteed next year. So that, and you know, even if they do the conversion stuff, you pull it down, there is really no reasonable way that Houston was going to eat enough money to make that a real positive value contract where they should have been getting anything more than a fourth. And so their asking price, which, you know, Houston typically has been getting kind of screwed in trades by, you know, sending out too much. In this case, they were just asking for, you know, it's one of those things where as a general manager, you just hang up the phone because it's so far divorced from, you know, the real wide receiver market that it's just not even worth engaging in discussions any further.
And when you do the money on, because we've had a couple of these now in the NFL where you can kind of pinpoint like, what is $1 million worth of cap space worth in draft value? $16 million, which is what I believe was the Brock Osweiler trade, was worth like a second round pick. So if you're trying to get them to eat that money on top of that, and they view it as net zero and you view it as a negative, that's another second round pick on top of that. And that's just never going to happen. I mean, the window for even these mechanisms to happen had already passed,
which I do not. Do you understand why that is? Like, why does this deadline exist basically 24 hours before the deadline when all of these contracts, the conversions are automatically reserved as the rights of the team? So I don't understand why players, because in all these cases, you know, and again, the NFL trade deadline is usually pretty mild. And when they're constructing CBAs, they're not thinking it's going to be super active because it really hasn't been until the last couple of years. But why would these players who then in the case are largely on bad teams not want to go to good teams where they can, you know, in hypothetically perform better and therefore potentially increase their future earnings? Because especially when teams trade for a player, you know, these players basically have the teams over a barrel in terms of contract extensions. We see this over and over and over again. So I don't know if this is just some weird like oversight by the Players Association, but it seems like kind of an own goal procedurally.
Yeah, I think one, the NFLPA doesn't want you touching contracts in general, right? And then two, I would think just the mechanics of getting the contract renegotiated and then getting the trade through the NFL before that deadline, which again, there's got to be a better way.
Are they sending it via mail?
There was that whole weird like fax thing, right? With Elvis Dumervil back in the day. Like, can you imagine a situation where a player negotiates their contract, the contract goes through, but then the trade is like 1 minute late?
Oh yeah.
Now the players are making less money.
Because Manchester United's goalkeeper, David De Gea, like 5 years ago, was supposed to go to Real Madrid on deadline day, and the fax was a minute late getting in. So he's still there. So he's just been at United ever since then.
Yeah, I'm sure that's one reason. Jerry Jeudy was a guy that didn't seem like the Broncos were going to budge off of much. Rob Domofsky said the Packers were planning on trading for a player that was then kind of pulled off of the market. I don't know if that would be Jerry Jeudy. Ben Albright reported that the Broncos were looking for a second and a fourth round pick. They weren't really trying to sell, even though they traded Bradley Chubb for a first round pick. So that's another name. I mean, the weird thing with Jeudy and Cooks, and it's a question I haven't really had answered yet, and it's something that's like worth monitoring with Samori Toure, right? These smaller, right? They're not necessarily small, but these smaller wide receivers, right? The guys who are under like 205, they don't really get play from the Packers. Like, the Packers bring in a couple of them as undrafted free agents in the summer. They usually don't even make the practice squad. The Packers end up drafting the bigger guys. They end up playing the bigger guys. Would Jerry Jeudy and Brandon Cooks only be third down players, like they told Odell Beckham Jr. that he was going to be for this team, if they made that move? Because
to me, it just blows my mind. Like, I have some, like, this is where I kind of have an issue with the way that the roster has been built in the LaFleur era, where they, like you said, they're targeting these bigger bodies because they like to get them involved in the run game. They like to be able to insert. And also they like, a lot of their offense, particularly with Davante Adams, was built off of, we're going to throw Adams the ball on these now screens or these bubbles, and then we'll have Alan Lazard and MVS blocking, because they're bigger guys who can, Lazard's like 230, and the corner he's going up against is like 190, and so he's just moving bodies. But what we've seen as the biggest kind of Achilles heel of the offense is that when we just get into, okay, it's third and seven, and we gotta, we have to convert here. And now we Randall see what Cobb teams are time. Doing here. Yeah, it's like, okay, it's literally just Randall Cobb right now, because you don't have anybody that can really beat man coverage. And, we've seen, I know you had mentioned something in Slack last week, where teams are playing an obscene amount of two-man, which two-man is like the most disrespectful coverage an NFL team can really play on you, because they don't think your receivers are any good, and they also think your quarterback is slow. And so if you're getting caught and, teams are just playing, base level two man, and you don't have anything you can do with it, maybe you need to kind of tweak the way that you want to build the offense and some of the profile of players that you need, that, okay, maybe being able to convert these third and sevens, or when we get down two scores, which is going to happen. We've seen this happen, against the Niners, and then it happened against the Buccaneers as well in the playoffs, where it's just, okay, now if Davante Adams doesn't do 14 catches for 197 yards and two touchdowns, we're not coming back in this game, And that was something we were actually spoiled with as Packers fans for, basically a decade, where the receiver room was four or five deep of guys who could legitimately beat that man coverage. And so, telling OBJ is like, yeah, you'll play like 25% of the snaps. That's ridiculous, because it's also, we know it can work because he went to a similar system and was a major part of their offense. So it's not like this,
they transitioned into the gun and all that stuff. Like, they were probably,
and you can do that. Like, that's
they the can, thing. But you they don't want to.
You have to be adaptable, because the thing is there's not enough 6'4", 225 pound guys on the planet who run 4.5. There are not enough of them for you to only try and acquire those guys. Like, you look around the NFL, it's like, what, Lazard, Claypool, Cooper Kupp is actually like surprisingly big. Like, Davante Adams is pretty big, but there's not that many guys. Most of your receivers are going to be sub 210. And like, so you have to be able to make that work.
That's why I looked into this upcoming draft class, right? And I wrote it up on the site about kind of wide receivers to watch first couple rounds. And there's really one in the first round. I mean, it's Quentin Johnston, the wide receiver from TCU. The other guy, I'm spacing on his name, the Wake Forest guy, he's more of like a MVS type of just like super, he's like 6'5", long strider, like track speed. Probably a little bit better than MVS, but you guys get what I mean. There's not that many guys available in the draft. Even the Amari Rodgers class, you look at wide receivers who are as big as Amari Rodgers, it was him, and then it was Nico Collins. That was it. The Packers took the first big wide receiver off of the board, and it was Amari. And even though he's short, he's wide, right? So, yeah. And they use him as an insert guy and all that stuff. And it is a limiting – I'm not going to lie to you and say it's not a limiting factor. But
super limiting.
It's what they do.
But we also know that they're – you know, at least I shouldn't say we know. From reports that we got from Aaron Rodgers about the first round grades they had on receivers, we know that they are not like fully committed to this. Cause you look at the first round receivers that were in this last draft. Okay. Like Treylon Burks is like big, but he's big in like a, this is basically a running back kind of way, not in like a, you know, we're going to pull him into the formation. He's going to block defensive ends kind of way, but Garrett Wilson, like Chris Olave, which if you've seen him in those new receiver metrics, it'll just break your heart. He is fantastic.
The Packers apparently really did like Olave. Yeah,
and it's like, that's okay, so
hashtag sources.
So that guy, like you're not pulling him into the formation. He is rail thin.
Yeah.
And it's like your offense can at least have one of these guys. And so I don't understand why you would, you know, be so self-limiting when right now this roster doesn't really have that guy. Like Romeo Doubs is probably that guy, but I mean, yeah. To his credit, I mean, he's blocked his ass off a lot this year, and he's not even that small. I mean, he's still like a 205 kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And even Sammy is kind of a true outside wide receiver for them in that, like, they get in all these condensed splits, right, and Sammy will still be split out wide. This last game, they had him kind of doing the Lazard stuff. It was not the prettiest. He put out an effort. I'm not going to, like, that's a hard thing to do, yeah. But he was not Alan Lazard doing it.
He looked like a true X trying to just really giving it a good go.
Yeah. And I think the speed stuff, right, that we just mentioned, I think it's less apparent in this pass game. But when Rodgers was hurt enough that the team was not really willing to go under center a lot and they were just RPO game the entire time, that's when it was the most pronounced. I mean, that's when they needed that 2-week stretch against what was it, the Commanders and the Jets.
Yeah,
that's when they needed that speed guy the most, and they just did not have that guy, and it's why the offense just completely sputtered, even though the opposing passing games weren't even doing a great job. You know, I mean, those two games in total, what, there was like that one big play to Terry McLaurin, and that was kind of like it from the opposing teams. The last guy that was traded, Calvin Ridley, he was sent for 2 draft picks that have a bunch of conditionals to Jacksonville. So he's back in Florida where he got suspended for gambling on NFL games. That would have been one that would have been interesting because you at least would have figured out where the timeline of the Packers was, right? Because that would have signaled, all right, 2023, we're going in on 2023. I don't know what they're doing right now. I really, and this isn't to knock them. We just have no signals. We have no signals at all. Like, okay, this team is going to have to rebuild. When is it coming? Or are you just going to try to like push through the end of this?
Yeah, the Ridley thing, I mean, it would have been by far the funniest trade to occur. Like, there's no doubt about that. And he kind of would have helped solve the speed thing. I mean, he's not the same type of deep receiver, but he can move, and he's been quite successful in kind of those intermediate to kind of short, deep ranges, which the last few weeks, I mean, Green Bay would have killed to have anyone working in that kind of 15 to 25 yard range. I mean, it would also help if the quarterback would actually throw to those areas of the field ever. And so
Tua, you know, like, Tua is leading the league.
Yeah. Well,
running the same system.
Well, it's like the Tom Brady deep ball where it's not like he's throwing it deep. He's just, you know, it's a snap and I'm throwing it like after 1.25 seconds and it's just ending up 25 yards downfield, but I'm not really seeing it open. It's, you know, I have Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. They'll be able to win, and I'll just trust that they're winning. Yeah. And so, but with the Ridley thing, I mean, yeah, we would have gotten some signal, but the thing is I don't think the front office really knows, you know, what's going to happen. I mean, even if 12 is like, yeah, I'm coming back, can you trust him? Like, would you trust him if he's saying that? Like, I don't know if I would. And now for Green Bay, it's probably less of a price to trust him, because whenever the end is, it's just, it's going to be so bad that, you know, and the Packers are not a particularly rash organization. So I'm sure it is understood from the front office, from a job security perspective, that like, yeah, when Rodgers leaves, you guys will have a couple of years to kind of put the pieces back together. Like, that's something that's probably been a discussion between Gutekunst and Murphy. And so, you know, it's not like,
well, Murphy's going to be out soon, right?
Oh, that's true.
Retiring at 60 or whatever. So
that's true.
Get a new team president.
Maybe we'll have a whole head full of handsomes running the team now.
Could we run? Could we swing the vote for APC? I did when I got the shareholders thing. I did learn that there's like clauses. There are clauses to prevent a hostile takeover of the Green Bay Packers, which I thought I was going to be able to win a local election. That's not necessarily how this thing works out. The one question I do have about, so obviously there's a question about like Rodgers. Is he coming back? And if he is coming back, how many years? Because they kind of need a commitment in terms of like, we need to know what type of a timeline we're talking about now, right? Came out earlier this week, Sean McVay, you know, he's tied to kind of that like Aaron Donald, Matt Stafford, Jalen Ramsey core. And whenever they go, he's going to end up retiring, which I don't think is surprising. He had talks with Monday Night Football.
That yeah, like he almost happened. Retired after the Super Bowl.
That doesn't happen without you knowing about it, even if your agent is doing that on your behalf, right? Going from an NFL head coach to being on TV it's a career change that you got to have conversations about.
Especially he's what, like 35, 37? Yeah. Like he's not like, you know, he should be early in his career, but it's pretty clear that he's like, I don't want to do this forever. I don't want to live this, you know, life, which frankly, like the life of a NFL coach sounds pretty miserable when it's like, oh, I could just do TV work and make a ton of money and work like 3 days a week.
Not only that, but I mean, I know it's not good to say Gruden's name right now, obviously, because of all the stuff that's come out since then, but like, look at Gruden. Gruden just went and did TV and then was like, I can pick wherever I want to go. And he got a 10-year, $100 million contract.
The most asinine thing that I have ever seen.
Which, like, he could do it. He could do it. Like, if McVay retires and then 3 years later is like, hey, I want my pick of these jobs. Sean Payton right now is eyeball. I can tell you guys this because I already talked about it on SB Nation NFL show. Sources told me Sean Payton's already eyeballing the Cardinals and the Chargers. And he's only been out of the league for a year. But what he doesn't have to do is he doesn't have to deal with the rebuild in New Orleans. And now he gets to pick a place that has a quarterback. It's easier to quit and go and do TV or take a year off and then just populate with a quarterback on another franchise than to go through a whole other rebuild. So, like, my question is, like, Matt is young enough to be able to do that stuff. If we know there's a rebuild on the horizon, like, are we sure he would stick through it?
I mean, we don't.
I wouldn't blame him.
No, I mean,
I wouldn't blame him.
Like the Packers' job, like when, whoa, buddy, the Packers' job when this era is over is so undesirable. It's not, you know, it's not Houston Texans level bad because of the complete organizational dysfunction, but I would equate it to like what the Philly job looked like when Nick Sirianni took it, like. High-end assistant coaches were just like, I'm not interviewing because that looks so bad.
Dayball was like, I'm out. But what they
didn't take into account is that Howie Roseman was just going to keep getting away with it every single time. Blew up? Oh, it's okay. Rebuild right back into contention. But the Packers' job is going to be like not desirable. So if LaFleur, you know, wants to just be like, okay, you know, I'm going to go, you know, I don't know whether LaFleur does TV. Though he is getting more long-winded in his press conference answers lately, so maybe he's practicing for the analyst job. Or just
if,
you know,
if he does get a TV job, the perseverance count through the roof. He can't go 5 minutes without saying perseverance. It's absurd.
The worst part is we're starting to get like the repetitive things that we would get with McCarthy, that we have basically figured out all of LaFleur's like little idioms.
Yeah. The thing with LaFleur, one, I wouldn't blame him. It's very cool to get TV checks. Two,
speaking
it's really
from
hard
experience or something.
No, I'm just saying in general, that money seems to be good when you're getting an offer. And it's like, yeah, Monday Night Football would have paid Sean McVay like $15 million a year. Seems nice. Two, it's really hard to find a quarterback. And then three, Green Bay is always going to have this thing where the structure of the team is always going to be a little different than the rest of the NFL. And the general manager situation, like the general manager is always going to have somewhat of a pull there, right? Which is going to dissuade certain coaches. Like I'm sure. So, like, Sean Payton, this is a good example. Sean Payton wants a weak owner and a good quarterback. That's it. So, he's looking at the Chargers. He's looking at the Cardinals. He wants what he had with the Saints. So, you look at the Saints. I mean, they're about as small of an organization from a front office standpoint as you get in the NFL outside of, like, the Bengals.
Bengals.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a small-time operation. Sean Payton was the man. He was the man in New Orleans, right? You can't really be the man of the Packers because the general manager is always going to have a certain amount of power. And it has changed a little bit. Like Ted was running the show in Green Bay. At the end, they both ended up reporting to Murphy. And now Goot and LaFleur both report to Murphy. It's kind of like a ownership led rather than front office led structure, if you guys want to think about it that way. Sean Payton and guys like that, like these big time coaches who are looking for these second time or these second opportunities, right? They want a coach led structure, right? So it will be interesting. And the Packers have been kind of cheap, honestly, in terms of their hires. I mean, they could have had Rizzi, right? I mean, that could have been the difference between a Super Bowl or not, right? And, you know, they finally failed enough at special teams that they decided, okay, we're going to hire Bisaccia. I don't think Joe Barry is up at the top of the league in terms of defensive coordinator hires in terms of money. I don't think Stenovich is up there. Hackett probably was making more than Stenovich. It's actually kind of surprising how low some of these salaries for – so, like, a first-time NFL head coach, how much do you think that they're making? Millions per year.
For a first-time guy?
Yeah, first-time guy.
Probably depends a little bit on how well, like, wanted they are.
LaFleur.
Because, like, LaFleur was not, like a dude as far as, like, you know, he wasn't, like, Dayball out of Buffalo, right, where it's like, okay, that's this right. Guy's put multiple years of...
But, like, a LaFleur or a Zach Taylor?
I don't know, like, 2 to 3 million, maybe?
Well, it's higher than that. It's okay. It's like 4 to 5.
Okay.
But that's still dwarfed by I mean, like, Belichick's probably making like 12 and stuff like that. So I mean, there's a pretty huge difference. That's why some college coaches wouldn't take NFL jobs, just because of the money. Like, the money differences, there's a reason why you look at guys and you're like, Matt Rhule from Baylor is the guy who jumps up in the league and stuff. And I think now people are looking, you know what's a weird, we're gonna get off of this, we're rambling now, we're gonna preview the Detroit Lions after this. A name that came up for an NFL head coaching search, apparently. Like, he's poking around. He wants to get into the league. Jeff Traylor. Do you know who Jeff Traylor is?
I don't have no idea who Jeff Traylor is. Like, I follow a decent amount of college football. I have no idea who that is.
UTSA's head coach.
Yeah, that would be why I don't know who that is. Like,
I mean, that's what we're talking about when we talk about college guys jumping up to the NFL level, unless it's Chip Kelly or it's Urban Meyer, where they're getting the contracts that are the size of Gruden's, right? If you're getting a first-time guy jumping up, it's guys who are like the lower end of the P5 or the higher end of the G5, basically.
Well, we even saw it with like Leonard, you know, and I don't think everything with that had to do with money. You know, his wife's family is from Madison, Wisconsin's his alma mater, and yeah, there was the implicit understanding that Leonard would at least get a shot at the head coaching job whenever Paul Christ was done. But like, yeah, like, I'm sure they could have, you know, offered him an amount of money that would have made him leave, and they didn't.
So to recap, first half of this podcast. Don't freak out about not trading a wide receiver. We have no idea what the timeline of the Packers window is. If Aaron Rodgers retires, we don't know if Matt LaFleur is going. But
other than that, everything's great. We've got a game to preview.
We're good. This definitely wasn't an overreaction to five losses in a season. We're going to take a break, and on the other side, we're going to preview this Lions game that hopefully won't leave us too disappointed.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. The first thing you guys need to know about the Detroit Lions is their best player is hurt. DeAndre Swift came back last week, had 5 carries, was a non-participant in practice yesterday, was a limited participant today. Who knows what that looks like? Jamal Williams has been doing solid for them. The one kind of X factor is today, Taylor Decker, after being a full participant in practice on Wednesday, ended up getting injured and was a limited guy on Thursday. So who knows? I mean, that's a left tackle. That's a pretty important spot. We saw kind of last year, the Lions, I mean, that offensive line is very good, right? They will hit you over and over and over again. They had a whole playbook full of trick plays ready for us in week 18, for God's sakes. In terms of the passing game, Jared Goff isn't great, but if you let him just sit back there and pat the ball, he can dice you up, especially against this game. We saw the first half in that, what was it, week 2 game last year. So
yeah, the sky was really falling after getting the beat down by the Saints. All of a sudden, Jared Goff is sitting back there, just literally, like you said, patting the ball because he's got a ball pat hitch problem. He's literally patting the ball and just diced him up for a half until really the entire team woke up, but the defense finally was able to get some pressure.
Yeah. So it's going to be a big game for, I mean, Kenny, Preston, Rashawn Gary. Preston's limited in practice back-to-back days with a shoulder neck that they haven't really talked about. It kind of popped out of nowhere.
Gotta be a stinger, right? Like, you wouldn't have a shoulder neck designation for much else.
Yeah. That is kind of worrisome, though, right? So the Packers pass rush.
Love the edge depth?
Yeah, the edge depth has been worrisome. I think Kingsley and Igbari has been doing a good job. He's kind of emerged. He's as good as you can realistically ask a fifth-round rookie to be playing right now. He did kind of lose contain a couple of times against Josh Allen. Josh Allen's a great athlete. That's just going to happen. Jared Goff is not Josh Allen. That fourth
surprisingly
pass rush,
a decent athlete though. Like, you think he's a statue, but he's okay.
Yeah. Kirk had one this past weekend too. Did you see?
Kirk's the same type of thing where he's like, he's a little more athletic than you think. And it's not just because he's white. It's because you just expect these like Shanahan drop back guys to all have the coordination of Garoppolo.
Yeah, no, that's true. The fourth pass rusher has been weird on this team. Cause it started off with Jonathan Garvin, who really kind of started off the year as like the third pass rusher on the team. He's been a healthy scratch for back-to-back weeks. They promoted Ladarius Gunter, or elevated Ladarius Gunter.
Oh, that's a Freudian slip.
Yeah. Oh, Ladarius Gunter. Oh, Ladarius
Hamilton. The cornerback.
Oh, it's because I was listening to RAE earlier, and they mentioned Ladarius Gunter in terms of the – I think it was like, what's the worst Packers team that made it to the playoffs? And they were talking about Ladarius Gunter. That game made me want to jump off of a plane set for Mobile, Alabama. Ladarius Hamilton. So he was elevated week 7. Week 8, they elevated Kobe Jones. And then they released Kobe Jones off of the practice squad this past week. So I have no idea what the heck's going to go on. They released him off of the practice squad so they could sign Patrick Taylor, who was released so that they could activate Kylan Hill. If you could follow that chain of events, they still have one open roster spot on their 53-man roster. That's probably going to be Chris Barnes. Chris Barnes started practicing yesterday. They gave him the designation to return yesterday. So technically he has a 3-week window to return to the team. But if you do the math of, hey, they're looking like they want to activate this guy, we have an injury at inside linebacker with Devondre Campbell, who's missed back-to-back practices and left the game last week, and we have an open roster spot, I think we can put two and two together and say Barnes is probably going to play. I'm pretty worried about this defense. This is the most worried I've felt about this defense in a long time. And I've been the Joe Barry apologist guy, but like now it's getting to the point where it's like teams know Darnell Savage can't fill the run, and you're just sitting there and you're not making adjustments. So they're just going to keep doing it over and over again.
You can just, you can just put Rudy Ford on the field. Like we don't have to keep having Savage play the alley guy in these shells when he's just going to miss the tackle, or he's going to pick the wrong hole. Or even if he meets a running back, he's one of the, we talked about the weights, the receivers earlier, like he's 190 pounds and he doesn't have good tackle fundamentals. And so, if coaches have the option to, people talk about when you run like duo, you're trying to isolate, corners and stuff. Well, if you can just run anything that's going to isolate your running back moving to the second level with Darnell Savage, that's a play call win right there. And so, and Green Bay has not really done anything to muck up the front line to prevent that from happening, whether that be either with players or schematically trying to just muck up running lanes and kind of steal gaps. They haven't really done much of it this season. And so you're leaving, a guy who's frankly just not very good at this point. And that's, I'm saying that as someone who has been pretty high on Savage for a while, but the writing's just on the wall. And particularly against this Lions team, like it becomes a problem because the strength of the team, like the best part is going to be that offensive line, which if they can get, the Packers in, if they get the Packers a nickel, they're just going to roll them over because the Packers have just been dying in nickel all year. So, do they go to the penny front, which I feel like we talk about every week on at least one of the podcasts.
I mean, if you're down a linebacker, that's one way to do it, right? Yeah. If you want to keep Isaiah McDuffie off the field and
if you just want to get Quay to just like stop thinking and just go chase the football. Like, cause a big reason for the run defense being bad is Reed and Lowry have been bad, but Quay Walker is just, he's picking the wrong gaps all the time. He's missing tackles. Just see ball, chase ball, maybe that's what you have to do because what you have been doing is exactly what will lose you this game, particularly if DeAndre Swift does end up playing because he is like breaking all of the running back metrics this year. He's putting together, basically the best running back season since like Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, no, he's awesome. Up until last week, he had been out basically a month, but when he's been on the field, he's been great. It's so tough to evaluate this team because the defensive line just makes no plays. They make no plays. And that just makes everything so much harder when you can. I mean, this is the same thing as last year when you can extend drives to be 15 plays, right? 10 to 15 plays. It just drains everyone. The one thing that was brought up this week in the presser, Joe Barry said, Darnell Savage would be a hell of a nickel for us if we could ever get him there. What does the best nickel, like, secondary look like? Because I can see a world where, and a lot of people were like, move Rasul to safety, right? Just flip those two. Is Eric Stokes one of the five best?
I was just going to ask, like, do you actually,
totally sure.
actually get better with Stokes off the field, which is really disappointing given, you know.
Yeah.
I know you personally have a lot at stake with Eric Stokes being good, given
Arif in week two was like, he's trash. I was like, what are you talking about? He's trash.
But the thing is like last year he was, I mean, he had he one of good. The lowest yards per target in the league. Now, part of that, he was getting targeted a lot. But yeah. you can if you're getting targeted a lot and you're not allowing much, I mean, I guess that's just kind of the best thing you can look for in a rookie corner because you're going to get targeted. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, at some point it's just like, because Rasul in the like the Rasul in the slot thing has not worked great.
He's looked better at outside corner.
Yeah, exactly. So just, you know, and the thing is they've got everything flipped because I know there was a on the touchdown throw to Diggs, which I, if you ever have actually seen the view from the backfield, the fact that that pass was completed is unbelievable because Kenny Clark is in his face right as he's throwing it. But Rasul's ending up on the side that he had not played on last year. Jair is playing on the other side, which is not the side that he had played on. So do you just reset things? You put Rasul at from the offense's perspective on that left side, Jair on the right side, Savage in the slot, and then, you know, Adrian Amos and Rudy Ford are your safeties. Like, that might be the best five.
That might be
like
it.
Which, like, we came into the season and Green Bay didn't even have a safety three. Like, we literally were like, okay, they've got two safeties and a bunch of special teamers. And, you know, when Ford has played, he has looked better than what Savage has looked like. And you know, better than what Stokes has been, especially the last few weeks. It's been really, really rough for Stokes. But I mean, I don't think Green Bay is going to give up on their second year first round rookie. Like, that has just never been their MO. They're always kind of, if anything, they're always too slow to make changes when they should be a little bit more cutthroat.
And Stokes is, you don't want to do like the body language psychologist thing, right? But like Stokes might be the guy who, like, if someone loses confidence, it looks like what Stokes is going through right now, right? Successful year one, year two, you're kind of getting picked on. He got benched for one play. They gave up a touchdown. He had to be calmed down on the sideline last game, right? Like, that's maybe not a guy you really want to, like, mess with his confidence either. But it's just a thought. I mean, these guys are coming back next year outside of, I guess, Ford and Amos. Goodness gracious.
Well, I mean, and depending on kind of what happens with Rodgers, there's a chance they could just not – they don't want to pay Rasul's roster bonus, and they could just cut him too. Like, there's a little bit of pain there, but they still save money with it if Rodgers is gone. I mean, you're going to have to try and save cap everywhere you can, and it's going to involve doing that.
Dark times.
It's going to be real dark.
Defensively, we already mentioned that Campbell. I think Campbell's probably not going to play. He's DMP back-to-back days. That's usually a bad sign. Flip into the offense. The Lions really aren't facing that many injuries. Like, Derek Barnes is a guy I like. He was a limited participant on Wednesday, full participant on Thursday. The Lions' defense is putrid. It is terrible. They
historically
just fired,
bad.
They just fired their corner coach. I don't think that's going to save them. I think the corners are just bad. Everyone says that Aaron Glenn is, you know, future head coach as a he's their DC right now, former NFL player, former corner. They've spent picks there. I mean, Jeff Okuda was a top high end pick who ended up getting hurt and stuff. Those guys just haven't been playing good. That's the one good news about the Lions, right? So, like, offensively, they can score points. They did have kind of like a 2-week lull. That was kind of weird. But they're still up there in terms of, like, points scored in the NFL. The Packers might have to get into a shootout, but if there's ever been a, like, get-right scenario for this Packers offense, it looks like this Lions defense.
And we're about to find out how bad this receiving core is because the Lions will man up. Like, they're terrible at it, but that's a pretty heavy dose of what they do. So we're going to find out just how bad, like, this receiving core is. Like, if it is legitimately the worst group in the NFL, if they go into Detroit here and they can't pass the ball efficiently, you know, and it's one thing if they go in and they run all of the, you know, the RPO stuff, the swing screens, and okay, like, you know, Aaron Jones breaks three tackles, and at the end of the game, the, you know, the EPA per play looks really good, but like none of the passing was real, which is like 60% of what happened in the Bears game. If this team is not like completing passes to the intermediate and deep parts of the field against this Lions defense, like even if the Packers win, it's just like, okay, so we beat the Lions. And as soon as we face an NFL defense again, it's the offense is going to
come. The Dallas Cowboys are coming the next week.
Oh, they're going to, like, I know you talked about one game season, but I don't see any way that the Packers win that football game. We'll get to that later, but just focusing on this Lions game. You know, this is maybe, adjusted for era, the worst defense in the modern era of the NFL, which is like basically the post, you know, illegal contact rules in 2003. Like, this might be the worst one. Like, yeah, it's that bad. And so if you can't go out and you can't, if they don't hang 35 on them, like, that's, now Green Bay plays at a snail's pace, but like, if you're not putting up 31, 35 points and you win a 24-21 game, like, that's a, you know, we talk about, you know, maybe the Bills game was a moral victory. That's just a moral loss. You know, like, you barely beat a team. You couldn't score on a team that's bad. You know, if you want to be the seventh seed, you're going to have to like really be able to put up points against real teams. And if you can't do it against this Lions team, which is not good defensively, like, what are we doing here? You know,
Malcolm Rodriguez, everyone loved him on Hard Knocks, 6th round pick. He's a rookie. Starting that inside backer for him. He quickly went from like a happy story to just someone who's getting bullied constantly. I mean, they're picking on him 24/7. The thing I don't understand about this offense, and LaFleur's kind of, they've kind of been speaking out of both sides of their mouth this week about this, because LaFleur has been saying, like, you know, we need to get more opportunities to pass the ball because that's how our explosive plays come. One, that's not true.
Buddy, who on the field this year? Like, who's watching running down
games.
The field?
Yeah, I'm watching killed. These games. You're lying to me. But then Aaron Rodgers is like, yeah, I mean, we want to get 33-28 going. Like, that worked. Like, we were moving down the field. The thing that killed them against Buffalo is they get punched in the mouth, they take shot plays, and then they end up going down 2 scores instead of just 1 score. And it's like, you guys aren't – this team is – they've cracked 30 once, right?
Aaron, this isn't 2011 or 2014. We don't have Jordy running up the post where it's like, oh, we just got scored on. I'm going to hit Jordy for 74 yards.
Yeah.
Like, this ain't team that is team. Not,
you're not scoring in one play with this team. It's just not happening. You scored 30 once. It was against the Chicago Bears. I don't know if it's going to happen again this year.
If it doesn't happen this week, it might not happen again.
Yes. Yes. So go slow. Take your time. Run the piss out of the football.
Yeah, because the Lions run defense also sucks.
Yes, terrible. Find Malcolm Rodriguez every play. Point him out. Point right at him. And just run the ball right at him. That's it. This has kind of not been talked about as much, but David Bakhtiari's missed back-to-back practices.
It's just getting really, really weird. Because when he's playing, he's like the last couple times he's played, the last two games he played, so the Jets game and the Bills game, he's effectively been like pre-ACL injury David Bakhtiari.
We didn't hear about Von Miller all night.
Nope. Not just once. Locked down. Yeah. PFF gave him like a 90 pass blocking grade. He's given up one pressure across those 2 weeks. It's like, oh, this is just that dude. But we're going to play this game every single week of like, does David's knee act up, or is he not comfortable with the way that the knee's feeling, like every single week? Like, and I talked about this earlier, but like, there's a decent chance that if the Packers have to move on from Bakhtiari after the season for cap reasons, that nobody signs him, because what are these teams gonna do?
Yeah.
And so like, that's the game we're playing at. It's like, it's not even just like the Packers, like, what does his career look like from this point going forward, where every single week it's like, you know, you can't play your entire career questionable.
And we got two of them now, because Ellen's got dealing with the foot. They thought he was going to be able to go until 90 minutes before game time. And he's like, nope, can't go. Got stepped on Thursday practice. Can't play. He was a non-participant yesterday, was limited on Thursday. So now we got both of the guys on the left side. I mean, I think Elton is probably going to play if he was that close to playing last week. And he's already, you know, limited in practice. But Bach, at this point, I mean, this is 7:36 Pacific on Thursday, November 3rd. He's probably, if you're out back-to-back practices, I'm just assuming that you're not going to be playing. So we haven't seen Bach miss back-to-back practices since he returned. So I'm going to assume, you know, Zach Tom is going to end up playing left tackle. Thankfully, the Lions don't have much of a pass rush on the edges. Aiden Hutchinson is getting bullied by people. I've seen clips of Teron Armstead holding him back with one arm. It's not been great for the, you know, former second overall pick.
Offensively, local friendly Chad.
Yeah. The other position to watch, right, is wide receiver. Christian Watson's limited in practice today with a concussion. That's probably going to go down until like game time. And then Alan Lazard has the shoulder. He's been limited both days. That is progress, though. Last week, Alan Lazard was not able to practice after he was, you know, in and out of the lineup against Washington with that shoulder injury. So that's at least a trend forward. I would assume Lazard is going to play. Watson, who knows with concussion protocol and all that stuff, is going to be close to the end. We're seeing positive signs. That's pretty much all I got there. Aaron Rodgers also limited participant back-to-back practices. If he practices on Friday, it'll be the first week that he hasn't missed practice since he got injured in London, which feels like a huge deal, especially when we're talking about developing these young wide receivers. Like just having Rodgers and Watson in the same practice together, like that's a win. That's a win.
Yeah, the receiver room, I mean, like it's so do we get clarification on exactly what Lazard's injury was, or would you just know it's like shoulder?
All we know is shoulder.
Because the way it was hanging, it's like he like had like an AC joint sprain or like a separated shoulder with the way it's just kind of hanging there.
Yeah.
It's tough to ask him to get in and do a lot of dirty work if that's going on. Because as soon as he goes in and he has to hit an edge,
he has to be on
like he's just gonna break.
Yeah.
And so like I almost wonder, you know, if they try and hold him back a week. Because, I mean, if Alan Lazard is the difference between you putting points on this Lions defense and not putting points on this Lions defense, then what are we doing here?
Well, so let's presume that Watson can't go. You got Sammy Watkins, Romeo Dobbs, and Samari Toure, Amari Rodgers. That's what you got for this game.
Probably call up. Winfrey. You know, you were able to pass the ball at least semi-okay against a very good Bills pass defense. Like, because you're talking about the guys we got a receiver. I mean, the Lions secondary is probably actually worse than that group of receivers.
That's fair. This game is at 3.5. Packers on the road. I want to take the Lions.
The line feels about
the
right.
hook there,
but it's like the five, the half is that's what it is. Because if it's a straight three, you're like, well, first of all, you're like, Vegas, go screw yourself. Because, like, you know, Packers by a field goal feels about right. So the fact that they threw the hook on there is quite rude. But I'll say this, we will probably know after the first quarter what this game is going to look like.
Two drives.
Because if you know. Because the first drives, like those aren't scripted drives, aren't real. But if they can go out and they can put together a second drive, if they get up 14-0 on this Lions team, and then, you know, Gary and if Preston's healthy, can just go hunt Jared Goff in the dropback game, this game will probably be over. Yeah. But if all of a sudden, if they're down 10-3, two drives in, like, you know, and the Lions can stick in there under center game, like it's going to be bad. Ugly. Like things are going to be really, really tenuous.
It will be kind of weird if it's like that. Cause if the Packers go down a score early and just can't make up for it, I could see.
Cause you know, you'll get the dead drive. You'll get the, oh, we're down 10-3.
Yes.
Post route overthrow to Dobbs, run on 2nd and 10, 3rd and 7, incomplete. Like that's how that drive will go.
If they get into that situation, I could see both teams just like sticking to their guns and just like playing under center the entire, like a very fast game where there's basically no punts involved is what I could see if that happens. I would, I kind of want to take the over in this game.
Just what is the line on the on that?
Let me look it up. On DraftKings, the official sponsor of SB Nation sites. Kevin Hart's face. It is 49.5. Pretty high.
That's pretty high, especially pretty like high it's pretty high. And Green Bay plays really slow. Like, you know, you're going to see a lot of double zeros.
The play might be like under punts. Yeah. I'd like to see under punts in this game.
That is some true degenerate shit. I'm like, hey, can I get the underline on the number of punts in this game? Because both of these defenses suck.
I've talked about this before, but there's a guy I know, pro gambler, literally all he does, right? Bets on, for the most part, like, I mean, he's a pro gambler. He gambles for fun, right? But for the most part, bets on two things. Mexican baseball, and he bets on longest field goal made in the NFL. Just hammers those props. Real degenerate stuff. People think being a pro gambler is like betting on NFL games and stuff. No.
Too much money. The lines are too perfect.
These guys, you will never meet a bigger WNBA fan than pro gamblers. Like, they want all of these, like, yeah, they want in on lines that don't have a ton of action on.
Yep, give them enough data, like a sport that they can get enough data from, but then there's not enough action because there's not enough money. Like all these NFL things, there's the market does too good of a job of perfecting them. You got to find the semi obscure sport. You know, all the pro soccer gamblers, they don't bet on the Premier League. They're betting on not even second tier, like third tier leagues, because there's enough information but there's no action.
Yeah. All right. Lions cover. Total looks solid. Under on punts. That's what we got this week. This is the Packers season now. I hope I don't sound like a Debbie Downer. I'm watching these football games.
No. I mean, at this point we're locked in, like, hey, go get the 7 seed. We'll see what happens. There's no rebuild or punt option. Like, This is what we're locked into. So, hey, you go, you know, the optimist thing, like you'll say, you know, they'll say that piece. And I'll be like, hey, the optimist view is the Packers go and win by 20 because they just rack up a ton of points. The offense looks a little bit better. They start feeling themselves a little bit. That's the best case scenario.
We'll see. That would be fun.
I don't believe it, but that's the best case scenario.
I'm trying to think of ideas for next week, right? Because this Lion game feels tight, but we do kind of expect to win. If we lose, all bets are off. The sky is falling. Everything is on fire. Sell everyone. Fire everyone, right? But if we are coming off of a win going into the McCarthy game.
The McCarthy Bowl.
I'm scared of what could happen that week. I'm scared of what my brain will shift itself into.
I'm thinking this just popped into my brain now, which just shows how like little I'm aware of the schedule beyond the very next week. But if the Packers do win, and so it won't just be like a pout fest, because the Packers lose, Rodgers is probably just going to go like full pout the rest of the year because there's just no hope.
There's no way. You'd have to go undefeated.
But if they win, I'm just imagining the levels of hero ball and like dragging 2014 out of himself that he is going to try to do, because despite what they all say publicly, like, we know that Aaron Rodgers does not,
of course,
like, nor does he even respect Mike McCarthy.
Of course,
because we know the rumor, or that he's like, this is the dumbest coach that I have ever had in my entire life. And so, you know, what he is going to try and do next week is either going to be Herculean in terms of like 2016, like it's just completely on his back, or I'm going to want to scratch my eyeballs out because he's going to try and play hero ball and it's going to fail so badly. There's no like Rodgers goes in and throws for like 230 and two touchdowns. It's either he puts together like a vintage MVP performance, or it's truly miserable and he's got like two interceptions and an NEA of like 2.5. There's no other choice.
It's our Super Bowl.
I mean, they're not winning the real one. So
yes, this is everything. This is everything this year is going to be that Dallas Cowboys game.
I'm scared of what you'll bet on for that game. Like your brain is just going to like, it's not going to function properly. And so you'll just be like, the thing is, you'll be hitting like all the live numbers as the game is going on. So
I'll be like, yep, here comes the choke job. Fade him. All right, guys. Keep it tuned to the feed. Keep it tuned to the website. We'll get injury reports and all that stuff up on Friday. We'll get polls out, which those have been fun. The SB Nation reacts. We got what I asked this week. I asked you guys if Joe Barry is going to be the defensive coordinator next year, which was a question Matt LaFleur got and laughed it off. I have a feeling you guys are going to feel a little bit differently about that. We'll have all the inactives and stuff up on Sunday. We'll have the recap. We'll have repack, and then we'll start previewing the Super Bowl. The Dallas Cowboys. Thanks for joining, Archon.
Yep, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.